My next guest has been a regular visitor to Australia, and for many years now we always speak to him when he's here, but I'm rather delighted he's here now. Dr. Daniel Pipes is an expert on Islamic terrorism and an analyst and commentator on events in the Middle East. He's the president and founder of the Middle East Forum. And I've said before, his website, danielpipes.org, is one of the most accessed sources of information on the Middle East and Islam. The website has been visited by more than 63 million people. The Washington Post has described Dr. Pipes as perhaps the most prominent U.S. scholar on radical Islam. The Boston Globe once wrote, if Pipes's admonitions had been heeded, there might never have been a 9/11. Dr. Pipes is in Australia at the moment as a guest of the Australia, Israel and Jewish Affairs Council. He's on the line. Dr. Pipes, good morning.
Good morning, Alan.
Always lovely to talk to you. Just go back to this point. When you talk about radical Islam, just explain again what you mean.
By radical Islam or Islamism, I mean a trend within Islam that seeks in modern times to apply the Islamic law, the Sharia, in its entirety and in a very severe way.
We've got people here in Australia who believe that.
Sure do.
So what should we be doing about it?
Well, John Howard said a few years ago that Islamists are not welcome in Australia. Unfortunately, he didn't do anything to follow up on that, but I think that's the approach I would take. It's like saying, you know, Nazis are not welcome or communists are not welcome. We don't need people in our countries who are devotees of a radical utopian ideology.
Why are we frightened of acting upon that belief? Every person listening to you now, hundreds of thousands of people are listening to you, every person agrees with you. Why does government not act on that will of the people?
Good question. It's a very delicate topic and difficult topic to implement. I mean, how does one actually translate Howard's admonition into policy, into regulations? At that point, government...
Well, I suppose when you find people preaching in mosques, this kind of radical stuff, you do something about it, don't you?
Yeah, there have been examples, particularly in France. I can recall a preacher saying something about the right of men to beat their wives.
Yeah.
Boom, a day later he was in Algeria. But it's very rare, and it's generally difficult to do. For issues of free speech, religious freedom, and so forth. It's proven...
What about the freedoms of other people not to have this kind of behavior and language polluting their life?
I agree with you. It's just, it turns out to be very difficult to implement.
The one reason I said I'd, and I'm grateful for that comment, but the one reason I'm delighted that you're here right now is that I have had real intellectual problem with this so-called spring offensive. We've had, I mean, and Barack Obama and all of these people, and it's a wonderful thing. You know, allegedly democracy has come to Iraq and so all these places, and now in Egypt. And now we've got all this business. The media is full of how urgent it is that this President Assad in Syria, that we get rid of him. And NATO seemed to support that, and the U.S. State Department seemed to support that. So what are they saying, that we throw Syria then to the wolves of these Sunni fundamentalists? Is that what they're saying?
That's what they're saying, yes.
How does that make sense?
Well, they don't know they're saying it. They insist on thinking that there's hope that the rebels against the Syrian government are fine people. I was on a television program last night, and the anchor said, well, but you know, these are good people, no? No, they're not good people.
Now, I don't know what the program is, but you shouldn't go anywhere near the ABC here. They're apologists for these people. But, I mean, here is Assad. Okay, let's accept that it's not a democratic environment and so on.
It's horrible.
Generally maintained order, and it's secularist, it supports minorities, and it's kept the country together. Now, yes, it's undemocratic, but it's preferable, surely, to the anarchic an intolerant Syria that's now shaping up as the alternative.
I agree with the thrust of your point, but I would be harsher on the Assad regime than you are.
It is
a horrible, brutal, totalitarian regime. But it is a regime, as you say, that's keeping the chemical arsenal under wraps, that is maintaining a certain order, and is not a devoted fanatical enemy of ours. It is, however, an ally of a devoted fanatical enemy of ours, namely Iran. So we really should not apologize for the Assad regime. It is horrid. It is execrable. But it is less bad than the alternative.
That's the point, isn't it? That's the point.
That is the point.
And this is the point about the Arab Spring. I mean, it's nice to be disarmingly idealistic, but my God, what have we got as a result of the Arab Spring? I mean, Christians are being murdered in Egypt.
Right.
Churches being burnt down? Is that what we want? No one comments about any of that.
Well, let's translate it into policy. I think we should be always against the Islamists, whether it be in Egypt or Syria or anywhere else, always against them. We should be against the dictators, but we should work with them, not Assad, it's too late for that, but someone like Mubarak. We should have worked with him to push mm-hmm. towards an open political system, a legal political system, and so forth. And finally, the people we should support are those who began this whole upheaval back a year and a half ago, who are the liberals, the seculars, the moderns. They do exist. They're not strong. They're not contenders for power in Syria or Egypt, but they are our friends. They are the ones who look to us for sustenance and for inspiration. We should be always supporting them.
But
so in a case like Syria, where they are weak, we should nonetheless look for them, seek them out, help them, and help neither the Islamists nor the
But America and Obama and these people are on the side of the rebels.
You're right.
What future have we got in that environment?
They are looking at the world through rose-tinted glasses. They're thinking that this will turn out well. You're right, but it's not going to turn out well, and it's a big mistake.
And that's Egypt as well?
Egypt is more complex, but
my
simple policy prescription is always oppose the Islamists, like we always oppose the Nazis or the communists. These are enemies. These are barbarians.
They're excluded
and opposed.
Yeah. Well, you said on July 31, wrote, last week marked 60 years since Egypt's self-proclaimed free officers overthrew the constitutional monarchy of King Farouk, and the first anniversary when one can imagine the demise of the military despotism that so long has wounded the country. Sadly, its most likely replacement will bring on an even worse rule. How does that make sense?
Well, that's the Middle East today. The two main powers are greedy, brutal dictators on the one hand, and fanatical, radical utopians on the other. Which do you want?
Yes.
So I say, well, we don't want either.
No.
Let's look for our friends, however weak they are.
But Mubarak was a friend, and we could have worked with him.
No, he was not a friend.
Well, he was better than these people.
He's better than these people. It doesn't make him a friend. Look, we worked with Stalin against Hitler.
Yeah.
Did not make Stalin a friend.
No.
I mean, he was, a monster. But he was slightly less of a monster than Hitler, so we worked with him. Does not make him, a sentimental partner. He was not Uncle Joe. He was not a good guy.
Well, just take the Supreme Council of the Armed Forces, who still, I think, run Egypt, and then you've got the Muslim Brotherhood, who want to get rid of it. Which of these will win, and what will the consequences be?
Well, when I wrote that piece that you quoted just 3 weeks ago, I was pretty certain that the military would win. Now I'm a bit flummoxed by the events of 10 days ago. I'm not sure what to make of this firing. Is this it? Has the military quietly walked away from 60 years of dominating the country and will accept the Muslim Brotherhood? I can't imagine it. But I don't know what is going on, so I'm staying a little quiet on this.
Well, I mean, you're the expert. Let me just ask you then this. Syria, where's Syria going to finish up?
For one, I think the Assad regime is doomed. And for two, I think that the Islamists will take over. And I expect a lot of fighting, a lot of anarchy, a lot of ethnic and communal problems, Kurds, Alawites, Christians, and so forth. I expect there to be a break with the Islamic Republic of Iran. I expect a lot of interference by the Turks, by others, in the internal affairs of Syria. It's going to be a mess for a long time to come.
And Egypt?
Egypt, as I said, I'm perplexed at the moment as to what...
But it looks like the Muslim Brotherhood.
I'm not ready to say that, no.
But doesn't this mean that bit by bit and incrementally, the very thing that you've talked about, radical Islam, bit by bit and incrementally, it's on the march?
No question, it's been on the march for decades now.
Where does
it
end? Where does it end?
Well, Iran is the key country, I think.
Yeah.
It was the Iranian Revolution of 1978-79 that began this era. And I expect it will be the demise of that revolutionary government sometime in the future that will end this era. There will be a huge it will be a huge event for Iran, but it will also be a huge event for the Muslim world. It will be the first country to come out from this era of Islamist domination, saying, you know, what a wretched government that was, what a horrible experience that was. We're finished with that.
You're very optimistic.
Well, it's going to happen.
Is it? Well, what about Afghanistan? I mean, what's been achieved there with Western intervention? We failed way back in the 80s, and now they're still fighting, believing they can win it. Western lives go. Right. Australians and Americans are dead. What's going to happen when the West finally gets out of Afghanistan?
Well, I believe in both Iraq and Afghanistan. Our enormous effort of, in terms of lives and money will be for naught. During the 5 to 10 years, you'll see barely a trace of Western effort. It's very sad.
And if there is, as you, not you, but others talk about the war against radical Islam, will that war be won?
Oh, I do use that term. Yes, I believe we won, just as we won the wars against fascism and communism. But the question is, how expensive will it be? How terrible will the effort be? So far, it's a rather modest one compared to those two prior ones that lost. Mm. But we've got a lot ahead of us. So.
Hard to believe you can win those sorts of war with the kind of leadership we've currently got in America.
Agreed. Let's hope that it changes.
Great to talk to you. We could talk for hours. Thank you so much. Dr. Daniel Pipes, brought here by the Australia, Israel and Jewish Affairs Council.